Hello, friends, and welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Mark, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle in the United States. For those who are just tuning in, the program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. And today, we have a very, very special guest on, Scott Lemriel, coming to us from the Los Angeles area. Scott's had face-to-face contact with the members of the Galactic Alliance for the last 54 years. For those who are not familiar with the Galactic Alliance, they are a group of mostly human, all benevolent, all highly spiritual evolved entities. They comprise an alliance of 435 million planets in this one-third part of the Milky Way galaxy, and having approximately 7 trillion entities. And Scott, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Your friend Ambassador Terrillian is here, just came in.
Yeah, it's always a delight to have an experience. I'm so glad that you began to experience him after we met as well, so that you can tune in and get some wisdom from him and some help here and there. You know, they like to do that kind of thing.
He is a member of the Sayres civilization, which is a member of the course of the Galactic Alliance. And I'm a bit overwhelmed by his presence, but he's here, and the studio actually has lit up again in white light. My goodness. A couple of things I want to say before we go on to our interview to talk to Scott. Scott, you'll be here next month for our wonderful conference at the Galactic Wisdom Conference.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it after the Norway experience. Jerry was there, and I was there, and you were there, and Omnek Onik was there. And
right.
Luis May Turns from Bolivia, and that was fun. Yeah, and
yeah.
A lot of people gained a lot from that.
Just fascinating. Wonderful, wonderful thing. I want to tell everyone, too, I've gotten some wonderful help for the conference, but I'm looking again for one or two more volunteers to help out with registrations and doing some marketing. A lot of registrations have come in this week, but if you'd like to help out in exchange for free admission to the conference, please give me a call at 1-888-879-8339 or on my cell at 509-750-9793. Or if you have access to the internet, please just send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. And Ambassador Terrillian is saying too that if anyone has any questions of they'd like to ask him of the Galactic Alliance, to please call in after the bottom of the hour, after 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Our phone number here in the studio is 425-373-5527. Or toll-free within Western Washington at 1-888-298-5569. Anyway, Scott, you've been on my program many times. You've been on Coast to Coast Radio. You've also been on some other wonderful shows, including Caravan to Midnight Radio with host John B. Wells. You've been on the X-Zone Radio TV show with host Rob McConnell. You were on the Freedom Radio Network, the 100th Monkey Show, with host Tom and Ramon. Tell me, for our listeners who haven't heard you before, Scott, how did you ever get interested in this particular field, or what happened in your life?
Well, I would have to say of course, we'll bridge this for your listeners about who Ambassador Terrillian is and the Sayres, because most people. And I will answer your question, but most people have never heard of this race. They've heard of the Pleiadians, you know, people
right.
that look into UFO and the phenomena of extraterrestrials and all that,
right.
which are just people from other worlds, just like we live on this world.
Mm-hmm.
They live on their worlds, and it's not a big deal to them to move around the stars.
Right.
I got interested in this, really, I have to say, way before this lifetime, in other world systems where I lived and was a space explorer amongst a great host of beings that came to this planet millions of years ago and established colonies in places on this world. And a lot of races under treaty were allowed to do this. In the ancient past, some tyrant races or imperialistic type races, as well as very benevolent races, and they would establish a little colony, you know, here or there. But no one race has ever been allowed to dominate or control this planet or own it. whether they're negative or they have designs on it, there's always been a monitoring situation that's gone on here. And a lot of things have changed recently that we'll get into.
Okay.
I got interested in this lifetime when I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
I was 5 in Salt Lake City, and I've mentioned this story many times just to give people an idea of the kinds of things that happen to an individual that compel them, motivate them to seek out answers, to find solutions to things that nobody in the world at the time, or doctors or psychologists or psychiatrists or even psychic people at the time, I mean, they just didn't know how to deal with some experiences that people have. And some do today, a lot more. And at that time, I was 5 walking up the steps to my parents' place in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And my first experience along this line was an out-of-body, a fully conscious out-of-body experience that wasn't looked for or expected. And I was looking at my parents having a regular argument, not a violent one, just what would be considered a normal disagreement here on Earth between a man and a wife. And I could see, for some reason, the electromagnetic fields around their body, or what people call the auras. And I understood them, instantly understood what the colors meant. It was just instantaneous. There was no time to think about it. And there was a red energy field between them with sparks of energy coming off that were affecting me in a way that was painful, who I was. And I was suddenly out of my body, above this little body, watching it. And I experienced that I, as a being, am spherical in shape,
mm-hmm.
And I'm made of energy. And I was looking up at a larger sphere that was transparent gold light, and I could see into it. And inside this sphere were geometric formulas and mathematical equations and positions of the star patterns astronomically. And I was experiencing myself as a fully adult, mature male being or male entity.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked up and I said to myself, I knew exactly where I was in the universe. I said, Earth, what am I doing on Earth? It was such a shock. I couldn't figure out what I was doing here.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back in the body, and that experience, like what happened for many people growing up in our society, requires you put your full attention here to survive and learn the ways of the societies on this planet. And some years later, when I was about 11 years old, I was living in Washington State, where you are, Ted,
mm-hmm.
In a place called Cherry Crest, not far from Mount Rainier, up near Bellevue. And on a clear day, up on the top of this forested crest, this hilltop or small mountaintop, you could see Mount Rainier very clearly. And for some reason, at that age, I really wanted to know what beer tasted like. Oddly enough, it's a very practical experience. Because my parents drank it, and I decided one night I would get up very early and sneak a can of beer out of the fridge at 3 in the morning and climb out the bedroom window, walk across the dew-laden grass, and get up to this narrow roadway that wound between the homes up there.
Mm-hmm.
On a beautiful star-filled night, no moon,
mm-hmm.
calm, and I was just popped the can of beer, and I was about to have a taste of this. The next instant, I found myself lying spread eagle on my back, looking up, with this can opened, unspilled in my left hand.
Huh.
And up above this telephone pole, about 15 feet from me, another 50, 60 feet up, very close, very, very close, was a disc-shaped craft, maybe 30 feet wide. It's hard to tell how wide it was, but that's what I would think it is now. It was pulsating from blue to white light. There was no sound. And the first impression I had was that aboard this craft was a human being from another planetary system who was telepathic, very brilliant, very evolved spiritually. I have no other way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
Very benevolent. I had no fear, no mm-hmm. trauma. It wasn't like one of these abduction, little gray things that people have had that have been so suppressive. And no implantation situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I experienced a telepathic communication with this being taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And this went on for 15 minutes.
Wow.
A great stream of information was coming into me. I could not have dealt with it at that age or even known what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was over, this ship just pulsated from blue to white light faster and faster and shot up into space, straight up,
wow.
Gone.
Wow.
And then I got up, looked at this beer. I was mature beyond my age for this short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I dumped this beer out, put it in the garbage can, didn't drink it, went and went to bed, never told a soul.
Mm-hmm.
The connective experience that propelled me even further into exploring this phenomenon, what happened a week later when I was coming home from a choir practice aboard a bus, and I was the last one on the bus.
Uh-huh.
The bus would drive up a couple miles up a hill, drop me off at a wooden shed, and I got off, stepped off the bus. I watched the bus continue a couple miles down the hill till it disappeared in the trees. And then I took one more step, and my head was pulled up, upward. This is at dusk. By some benevolent force, and instantly I knew it was the same being that had contacted me mm-hmm. a week earlier in the middle of the night.
Wow.
And up in the sky at about 15,000 feet were two groups of these same-shaped, disc-shaped craft with this light around them, 15 in each group, two triangular formations, which
wow.
was very striking.
Wow.
And then I got this same impression of a telepathic communication taking place between this benevolent human being and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then the craft broke apart. They did incredible acrobatics for me to show what their craft could do, their maneuverability. And then they regrouped, and then both groups just tipped towards me. It's the only way I have of describing it. And then they shot gradually up into space and vanished.
Wow.
I walked the rest of the way home, about, three-quarters of a mile up the hill, told no one. Never told my parents or my siblings or anyone about this. And this was at a time, quite a few decades ago, this was at a time when there were many sightings of extraterrestrial craft all over the planet, particularly after we, here in other countries started setting off nuclear weapons above ground.
Sure.
That signaled some real dangerous situations for people out in space.
Right.
And there was a guy at that time, I think, that was flying a Piper Cub that had photographed a group of them, squadron of them, around Mount Rainier, and this fellow coined the phrase flying saucer, if I'm not mistaken.
That was in 1947, I believe. Yes.
47?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And so that was a little bit before my experience, but mm-hmm. I think that's when that was occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, 1947, you would have that because what happened in that time period? We had been setting off nuclear weapons above ground. And that began the establishment of the National Security Act and the CIA under Truman to classify this material, which they felt they needed to do in order to get people to rebuild the damaged world and rebuild society after World War II. So it's one of the reasons this has been so heavily classified. It goes deeper than that, but those two experiences really headed me in a journey that continued with many out-of-body experiences dealing with communicating with these beings, because it's just more practical for a being to leave their body and meet with beings who know how to do this themselves from other worlds, as well as traverse the stars in mechanical vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. So this is an easier way to do it and to understand and learn about them and the truth of their existence than to have a craft somehow task. It's quite complicated to, pick a particular human being out on Earth in our current society as it is today and zero in on them and somehow guide them telepathically to get somewhere way out in the desert somewhere in the middle of the night, and maybe land and pick them up, give them a ride, show them the ropes, maybe uplift them a little bit, help them be free of some subconscious problems, and then put them back.
Right.
Because there are numbers of forces working here behind the scenes in classified areas that monitor the movement of craft in and out of this planet. It's not always safe,
mm-hmm.
not yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when I was 21, to continue on, there's one. If you don't mind my sharing, I'll share one more experience.
No.
Because this started ramping up the experiences I had thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was traveling with a man and his wife and their new baby through the desert late at night, maybe 3 in the morning, on a journey around the western states, kind of a spiritual journey. We were just having some fun. And we were traveling in their car across the highway in the Salt Flats, quite a ways outside of Utah, but still mm-hmm. that's where we were headed.
Mm-hmm.
And they were listening to a country western station, which they like to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And I got an impression of being contacted. Next thing we know, the radio station is, nobody's touching it. It's blurring through these different frequencies until it hits on this frequency, listening to a commander of an Air Force base, the impression I got, talking to two Black Hawk helicopter pilots that were in stealth mode, no lights, because they detected something on radar. And I got this message from a human aboard this craft that he wanted to show us something collectively. Hmm. And I mentioned this to my friends, and they began to wonder what happened to the radio station. We could all hear the conversations between this commander and these two helicopter pilots, which was, you know, just riveted us. And we pulled over to the side of the road. This fellow, his name was Monka, I believe, said he wanted us to look out the windshield up into the night sky over the desert. And we did that. And the next instant, there was a brilliant flash of cobalt blue light, huge spherical, almost, I couldn't tell if it was saucer-shaped or spherical because the light was so bright, and it lit up the desert. And then it shot straight down to the ground, vanished as if it was crashing at high speed.
Wow, wow.
And the next thing we heard was this commander telling these helicopter pilots to get their so-and-so out there and find out what's there. And when they got there, they couldn't detect anything on radar. There was no wreckage, nothing. Hmm. And then the radio station blurred back to the Country Western station. We smiled at each other, and we just drove away.
Oh, fascinating.
A lot of these things happened that I never communicated with the public. And since that time, I spent over 30 years, 35 years, learning from master teachers and very advanced benevolent extraterrestrial spiritual master teachers, and because that's where most of them came from, and in out-of-body mode and in direct contacts to develop to, I guess, enough understanding to the point where I could start to do this work in writing the Sayre's agenda and bringing out this message and the way to access, experientially access this for people, a safe way to do this, because really what people need here is a way to have their own direct experiences like I've had, because then when they look out in the universe, they're able to directly perceive and understand hidden truth on a vast, grand, multidimensional scale for themselves. So this became kind of a mission for me, or a co-creative thing that I could do in alliance with these beings, because they recently went through a change themselves and have decided to actually intervene in this planet in a very uplifting, benevolent way that has never occurred before in the millions of years. That's the true history of this planet, and in fact has never occurred before in our galaxy.
I just want to, pardon me for interrupting, Scott, but I just want to make this comment that during my last hour, I had Jerry Wills on, and he's been down in South America where he's found these incredibly ancient and fascinating roads and cities down there that are much older than the pyramids. And I told, I mentioned that I would, I said at that time last hour that I would mention this to you. And that's, I'm sure, that's part of our hidden history, isn't it, Scott?
It very much is. Okay. And you have to ask yourself, and he knows it well.
Right.
I was by the way, it was a delight, for me it's a delight to hear Jerry's calm, even voice. Now, he's a great radio host personality, and you know, he has a lot to share. But he's also a friend. And we met in Norway for the first time, and we're friends now, and it's a delight to hear him speak and share what he does, because this guy's basically had to grow up and live as a 6'9" guy.
Yeah,
I think he said in eighth grade he was 7 feet something, which is not, it just doesn't happen. But anyway, it was fun to hear him, and I always appreciate it. The canal or the aqueduct he was talking about.
Right.
And many of these other things are even just in the more recent antiquity,
going
back far beyond 10,000 years. But that's very recent.
Yeah.
And most people on Earth are taught that we have this 10,000-year history, that we all came from primitive tribes and developed to where we are now. This just is not the case.
No.
In fact, in my exploration and studies dealing with galactic history, true galactic history, and the history of our solar system and the real history of our particular planet, when you get out and explore things with beings who have never been part of what I call the trap of being here on Earth, because it is, and we'll get into that, these beings have never been part of having something in their subconscious that could control them or dumb them down or close down their higher faculties to know truth for themselves innately.
Sure.
And so when you get with them, they can show you and they can have you experience for yourself what the real histories are, because in reality, everybody was there, either on this planet or underworlds. Beings that live on Earth today, every single one of them, as twisted as some have been and as benevolent as others have been or are, came from the stars or came from other worlds long ago during different colonizations that have taken place to this planet under treaty. And it would really help people if they began to understand what that treaty was and how it came about and what it means, and more importantly, what has been decided off-world to begin to change this place. And it's not an Armageddon. It's not the end of the world. This has never been their plan for this planet. And although there are tyrant races who can come here and have bases in different places selectively on Earth, along with very benevolent races, and they have, the thing that's going on off-world now is a process to benevolently change or alter the subconscious controls that are operating in tyrant races to be the terrorizing forces in the universe. And that is the way you solve it. You have to solve the bigger problem off-world in order to solve it from hidden classified things on this planet, because people who are running this planet now are no longer in control of what they're doing. And the reason I say that is because if they really were, they wouldn't do what they're doing.
Sure, sure.
You know, to these normal people from all, what I say, normal human beings and other races, what is being done here is incomprehensibly negative to them.
Right. Right. Well, doesn't that stem, and maybe it stems before this too, wasn't there an agreement signed in the early to mid-50s by President Eisenhower with a tyrannical race, with the reptilians or the grays, that in exchange for their some of their technology that our military, industrial military would get it?
That was actually under Eisenhower.
Eisenhower, right, right.
Yeah, it started with Truman, but, it's interesting, and I always make this point because there is a connection to it. The crash at Roswell that's so famous, the saucer-shaped craft with some little gray guys in it, 3 weeks after that, Truman established what's called the National Security Act for this country and the CIA.
Right.
Both organizations were both, well, the law itself and the bylaws, how it reads, has to do with classifying anything to do with extraterrestrial life. And one of the reasons they got away with this then, or were inspired to do it incorrectly, was they wanted to get people to rebuild a damaged world, which was really pretty wrecked after World War II.
Right, right.
And 35 countries did this because they knew there were extraterrestrials coming here, and some of the leaders of those countries were secretly contacted, scared the heck out of them. Come out of World War II beating bad guys, and an atomic bomb is developed, which is another story how we got that technology, because we didn't build it ourselves. We didn't develop it ourselves.
Right, right.
And so this, they wanted to first of all, if you're in their shoes like Eisenhower, Truman, or any of them, and you're finding that there's these imperialistic, non-human bipedal races coming here and others, and very benevolent beings showing up, particularly after World War II and nuclear bombs were being exploded and tested, you would be really remiss to try to tell the public about this, because if you did, how could you convince the public that your military could protect you from a foreign power overseas, like in World War II, when you knew the technologies that are involved in these races from other stars is so advanced that if they wanted to come down here and take over, they could in a heartbeat, in an hour.
Right.
How do you do that? What do you do to get people to be baby boomers and feel safe? Well, you classify it. And 35 countries did this then. That was their thinking. But that thinking was being influenced by a negative group, and that's something we can get into as well. And Eisenhower was the first president to actually, as I know, sign a treaty. And it wasn't the first. He met first with a benevolent human group who offered to transform this planet and bring us into this, being a member of a great group of world systems, we could have been a spacefaring race then.
Fascinating. Wow.
They could have healed disease. They get people, normally human, I learned this. People on a, normal human beings on other world systems, the highly advanced ones, they live at least 1,000 years.
Amazing.
Number one.
Amazing.
Like the old matriarchs in the very ancient Bible kind of thing, 700, 800, 1,000 years.
Sure.
And they have a telepathic capability, which normal human beings all have.
Right.
And they have a photographic memory. They use 100% of the brain they have between their ears instead of 6 or 10% that we're told we work with here. And that doesn't make sense. You have 100% brain, you only use 6, 10% of it. That's
right.
Not normal.
No.
But people think that is. It isn't.
Right.
So the benevolent races have been coming here for countless ages, really, under treaty.
Mm-hmm.
And Eisenhower first met with a benevolent group, and he felt uplifted by them. And they met with some other leaders as well. But they were scared because him and his generals and were scared because they figured one of their requirements for providing us with spacecraft and everything we would need to go play among the stars was two requirements, really. That our world system is run collectively by one government that is benevolent, that doesn't lie or deceive the people. I'm not talking about a new world order here.
Sure, sure.
And number two, they have to have begun space exploration or stepping off the planet.
Right.
And, well, there's actually a third one. And number three is, this is what they told our president at the time, that we have to give up all nuclear weaponry, any kind of radioactive material, because they do not use it. It's outlawed.
Wow.
Because it's only destructive. There's no constructive use for it.
Right.
I mean, why would anybody develop an isotope that if it gets out of its lead container will kill everybody?
Right, exactly.
They don't use that type of energy to get around.
Sure, sure.
So they obviously would not come down and give us that kind of help if we were going to be a belligerent bunch of people at each other's throats and playing with nuclear weapons.
Right.
And all they could do under their own bylaws was, when Eisenhower said, we can't do that, I can't get the Soviet Union and other people to give up their nuclear weapons testing, and he knew he couldn't. So they left with the promise they would return one day when things were better suited.
Mm-hmm.
Well, another group met with him, too, a few months later. They were a reptilian bipedal race, very intelligent, very haughty. And they proposed the same thing with one exception. They would provide us with some of the more antiquated extraterrestrial technologies in exchange for doing certain genetic sampling amongst the populace, which they said would be get their samples with and put back without any memory or harm done to them. And, of course, when Eisenhower met with them, he didn't feel comfortable around. Nobody, you wouldn't. They're tyrants.
Right.
And he was a good man, and he turned them down. But this guy was very clever. This is the experience I have. He was very clever. He said, if you don't sign a treaty with us to get the technology you're after, we'll go to the Soviet Union, deal with the premier there, and we'll make them the preeminent power on Earth. And what Eisenhower didn't know was that they were in the Soviet Union at the same moment, representatives of this group, doing the same technique on them at the same moment.
Scott,
so they played one side against the other.
Scott, I hate to stop you, my friend, but I just want to make a station announcement for those who are just tuning in. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. We're having a fascinating discussion with Scott Lemriel, who has had face-to-face contact with the members of the Benevolent Galactic Alliance for the past 54 years. He's talking about some fascinating historical things and our bright future. He will be at our Galactic Wisdom Conference next month on March 6, 7, and 8 at the Inn at Gig Harbor. The website for that is www.galacticwisdomconference.com, or you can call me for more information at 1-888-879-8339 or at 509-750-9793. It looks like we're getting a caller in. Scott, would you like to take some calls?
I would love to.
Okay, our calls, I'll just give out our numbers again. We're getting one in now. The phone line directly to the studio here is area code 425 373-5527 or toll-free within Western Washington is 1-888-298-5569. We'll wait till my wonderful sound engineer Eric brings the caller on board. But go ahead with your story, and then we can take a first call.
I only mention a little bit of this history because it's history in our own country here that has been classified, and at the time they thought they were doing the best thing they could.
Sure.
But it really, the reason I get on these shows, or, you know, Ted, you know me, is to bring to the table a way to access through the pineal gland in the center of the brain, a safe way, a protected way, for people to begin to experience what I now know to be true without a shadow of a doubt for themselves. And I do that at conferences like the one I'll be attending, the Galactic Wisdom Conference. Mm-hmm. And I've done that in Norway. And I share with people and demonstrate with them how to raise their vibration up and get in touch with beings of a benevolent, high evolutionary nature that have the wisdom and knowledge and the know-how to help people come out of this almost hypnotic place that they're in on this planet. Most people can't remember how they got here when they were born, where they came from, where they're headed, and this isn't normal. And, you know, we can get into that maybe a little bit later about why this came about and what is being done to change this, to reverse that.
Right, right. Would you like to go, would you like to take a caller now, or would you like to go through the Hue first and then take the caller?
Let's just do a Hue quick first. This ancient vibratory word is not, that I'm going to share, is not native to this planet.
All right.
It didn't evolve here from any spiritual group or masters. It was brought here. It's billions of years old. And it's designed to connect the individual to the core of their being, that which is not the physical body, and then plug it directly into the omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent living force or energy that underlies and sustains all creation in the multidimensional universe. It is a multidimensional universe, both higher planes and many parallel planes. And when people begin to experience just how vast it is, they begin to remember and they begin to wake up to what has been deprived them intentionally. It starts to surface. And when you hue, it begins to connect the individual to those beings in creation that are benevolent only, that have an interest in helping mankind on this planet wake up and evolve to their true nature, to return to it, really.
Right.
And it does this, and there's a certain protection that goes with it that people can experience for themselves. And it sounds like this. You just get comfortable, relax, and then send it out on a tone, if you're doing it vocally, that's comfortable for the individual. You know, just a couple of breaths, and then just send it out. And you pause and look and listen. Don't have to make anything happen. And I send out always, safely show me purposefully hidden truth on a grand cosmic multidimensional scale, and the much greater knowing of the expansive love within it.
Wonderful.
And I send that out for 10 or 15 minutes. You know, people can do it before they go to bed at night, and it'll build a bridge between where they go at night when their body's asleep and what they do, and bringing more of that memory back here.
Wonderful. Well, Scott, thank you so much for sharing that. Let's take our first caller, Tom, who's calling from Kansas. Tom, welcome to the show. Hello, Tom. Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can hear you now. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Certainly.
You, please feel...
I've had a traumatic brain injury and about at least three near-death experiences. I've been in a coma two different times in my life. The last one from my traumatic brain injury. And I heard you talking earlier about pulling these microchips out, and I'm about certain I've been chipped, and I'm wondering how to get tested for that and how to get removed.
Oh, hi. What's your name again?
It's Tom.
Tom, nice. I'm very glad you called in. I would say that do this Hue that I just shared with you. You can do it out loud because you feel the vibration. You'll feel that it vibrates just the head upward, or basically the pineal gland in the center of the brain. And it connects you to the circumstances, beings, and events to begin to cross your path to solve a lot of these problems. And in addition to that, it will help you in many ways if you do it 10 or 15 minutes at night or longer if you're having experience before you go to sleep. And ask to, you know, be shown this purposefully hidden truth on a grand cosmic scale safely, because a certain protection comes with it. And then if you, you could contact Jerry Wills at some point, because he's a healer that works with this kind of thing. But if you can't do that or you're unable to go to the Galactic Wisdom Conference, don't be concerned about this. If you work with this you, you will begin to set up or send out a signal that you want certain things to happen in your life to change or be of benefit to you, and these kinds of things will begin to cross your path.
Tom, before I forget, if you'd like, go ahead and give me your phone number now. I'll make sure that I can put you in touch with Jerry, or you can give it to my sound engineer off-air. Either way is fine.
Sure. It's Bay Code 316.
Okay.
990.
All right.
7288, Central Time.
Okay, 316-990-7288. Okay, I'm going to be giving a Jerry call after the show anyway, but please continue, Scott.
Yeah, and if you want, you can have Tom contact me through my email as well.
All right, fine.
And if Tom, I may, if maybe we'll talk a little bit after the show. I might call you if that's all right.
Super, that sounds good. I've got some awesome technology to talk about too.
And we'll have a little bit of a chat and see if I can help a little bit more here. Okay. Very nice meeting you, Tom. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah. Tom, thank you so much for calling in. Really appreciate it. You know, Scott, you have so much interesting things to say. Now, when you do the hue, you can do it out loud, but you can also do it silently as well, can't you, if you're in a room full of people?
Yes, of course. Yeah, and here's the thing. It will work as well. If you're in a bus of crowded people, you're at a party, you're at someone's house,
right,
and you don't want to be embarrassed or you don't want to have to explain what this is, because
right,
a lot of people won't be ready for it.
Right.
Then you can do it silently in your imagination, the same way you do out loud, and
okay,
it will still work for you.
All right.
And it still provides that protection wherever you are.
Fascinating. Could you explain a little bit about, now you say it opens up the pineal gland. Could you explain a little bit about that, please, for our listeners?
Yeah. This is a gland in the center of the brain. It's like a controlling gland.
Mm-hmm.
And it has rods and cones in it, like the ones in the physical eyes, connected to the optic nerve.
Right.
And when you begin to hue, it goes through one of these rods and cones that are attuned to specific frequencies,
mm-hmm,
to different locations in the multidimensional universe. In other words, it's a mechanical, physical tool,
mm-hmm,
that you, the being, can work with when you have a physical body to either get in and out of the body through that door, or while you're in the body, through the creative imagination, which people call the third eye,
mm-hmm,
look into the universe when this is activated, and perceive directly hidden or purposefully hidden truth on a grand cosmic scale for
mm-hmm
yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We all have the ability to know truth in the universe inherently. If you're a tyrant or a tyrant race and you want to shut that down, you either cloud the clear liquid in that, inside that gland, which is about the size of your thumb, so it's difficult to see through it, or you shut down certain genomes
mm-hmm
on the DNA. And here, as you know, scientists have mapped out recently over 1 billion genomes on the DNA of a human being. Each one of these, and we talked about this, some of them are considered junk DNA. They're not.
Right.
But when you shut down certain genomes with a precise frequency, because they're activated that way,
mm-hmm,
you can shut down a person's ability to live 1,000 years down to 80, or generally in that area.
And that's what's happened here?
Yes.
Okay.
And you can shut down their telepathic function, which means you can communicate with other beings
right
elsewhere,
right,
master teachers, and know
mm-hmm
truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it also works with shutting down, for many people, this photographic memory ability, so you struggle to learn things and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a person kind of stay in a little bit of doubt.
Mm-hmm.
When they have experience, they still have doubt of whether the experience was real or who's telling the truth and who's not.
Right.
And if you can keep a race of people in doubt, you can control them.
Correct.
As a workforce.
Sure.
And so working through the pineal gland through the U opens a door that it can only open this door. It can't work with anything negative or positive
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or the duality of nature.
Mm-hmm.
It goes beyond that into this primordial current that we're all made of and plugs
right
you in there. And then from there, all these other beings and situations can come into your life. Mm. And they have, and each single individual has always had power over anything that's negative or evil, but we don't believe it anymore.
I see.
When people are convinced they don't, and there's an outside power that's greater than them, what they're doing unconsciously is using the great gift of their creative imagination to create a negative future, current life and future for themselves, by cooperating with this illusion that there's a power outside that can command you. Mm-hmm. The only reason that thing outside has power is because people have been tricked into giving up their own abilities in this way to some outside force. Mm. The hue begins to reverse that process. And like Jerry Wills is the healer, there are beings out in the universe that are master teachers, master technicians, master scientists. You can imagine, like we have on Earth, but far more advanced, loving, benevolent. On one of those world systems, if a child's born on a normal human system, the child's born with a memory of all that they were before in other lives, in other worlds. Mm. They bring it into that life, and their parents and their society reinforce this.
Fascinating.
It's not suppressed.
Fascinating.
So they wake up with this fervent, passionate fire to create and invent things which will be of benevolent good for all the race on their planet, but not just for their planet, for all the worlds they're involved with.
Interesting.
That's the normal state of a human being. Mm-hmm. Way down deep, we all know this is our natural state. The hue begins to bring that about. And when you can cross paths with someone like Jerry or other beings in the universe and get a little help, a little healing, a little boost along the way, this brings about a tangible experiential result for the person. And that's all that I want for people, is for them to explore what I share, experience the awakening for themselves, this knowing ability, and to experience the protection that I talk about that comes with this. And that's the most important thing that I have to share.
Sure, sure. I want to ask you this, Scott. We've got about 13, 14 minutes left of the program today. With this kind of help, we're looking at a very bright future, aren't we?
An unexpected turn in events, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And people won't see it on CNN or the news right now, but right. You can get little nudges of it if you know where to look.
Right.
And I guess Fukushima is a good place to start with that one, right, Ted?
Okay, let's talk about Fukushima. I know that the Fukushima nuclear disaster happened in I believe it was spring of March of 2011. There was a huge radioactive plume of very radioactive water coming from Fukushima directly to the U.S. West Coast and Washington State. Our shores along the Pacific were on target to become extremely radioactive a year ago in the spring. I went out and took water samples. I sent the samples to the radiation lab at the University of Wisconsin. I also sent them to California, California State Radiation Lab there, where they tested the water samples for free because Washington State refused to do any sampling. And guess what? The radiation wasn't there. It had been cleaned up. Much of the Pacific now is cleaned up. Now, I've heard that there is some radiation creeping back into the Pacific because there's 85,000 gallons of highly radioactive water still being dumped by the crippled nuclear reactors at Fukushima into the Pacific. But that's not like it was a year ago when they had this huge plume coming here.
I wanted to add to that, put it into perspective, because people really don't know this. They're certainly not being told it.
Right.
The four plants that blew their tops off at Fukushima were allowed to explode. And when Chernobyl occurred in the former Soviet Union, it killed millions of people.
Correct.
And from long-term radiation effects as well.
Right.
Yet this disaster in Fukushima was 100 times worse than Chernobyl. It should have killed everyone in Japan.
Right.
China, part of Russia, over the United States. It was that bad.
Right.
And it hasn't done that. Wow. And the reason it hasn't is because much of that radioactive destructive characteristic of what that was neutralized in the plumes and the waters off out in the middle of the ocean. And as you said, the radiation levels from that type of nuclear reactor are gone.
Right.
And you're going to hear stories about it, what it's doing and this and that, and how many gallons it's coming into the water and all that. But The important point is that some people from off-world have taken a hand in this,
right,
as they've done since World War II. To my experience, and this is what I've been shared with, this is what they shared with me, there have been 12 separate times during the Cold War with the former Soviet Union where both countries, one or the other, knuckleheads actually pushed the button to annihilate this planet in nuclear war.
Right, right.
And in all 12 situations, a couple of craft would appear over the launch control facility there in Russia or here in the United States and shut down the launch computers. No conversation, no hello, and they'd fly away, turn the launch computers back on with the launch mode shut down, and that was that.
Right, that's true.
We would have had a nuclear holocaust on this planet, an Armageddon, if there hadn't already been some benevolent intervention here. It hasn't been up to scale where everybody would like to see it, I think, a complete transformation, but that is now underway. So we're going to begin to see more of this.
Two things I'd like to mention quickly. A week ago, I had Major Ed Dames, one of the world's most foremost remote viewers, on my show, and we talked about that, and I... Major Dames, a very interesting, wonderful guy, he had mentioned the same thing, that we had had outside intervention from forces, benevolent forces off-planet that shut down our nuclear missiles when our generals and the Soviet generals tried to launch each other and try to blow up the world.
Yep.
The second thing I'd like to mention, and I've mentioned them before, the Emoto, we have some wonderful people coming from the Emoto Peace Project to the Galactic Wisdom Conference coming next month to Gig Harbor. And you should, my listeners around the world, you should know some of the incredible, fascinating, and wonderful work they're doing. One of the projects that Dr. Emoto did, started here years ago, was something to create angel water. And angel water is so named because the water itself originally came from Chernobyl. There was a spring there where people, when they drank the water, they didn't get cancer, they didn't get any radiation problems whatsoever. So, to the wonderful credit of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, and my hat's off to them, they are distributing water, this angel water, found a way to produce it with the help of Russian scientists to distribute this angel water free to the people in the Fukushima area. I know the Galactic Alliance is helping, but this is just such wonderful work they're doing, and I can't say enough good things about them, and they will be here at the Galactic Wisdom Conference, flying in just from Tokyo to explain this, and I have so many questions for their chief scientist, Dr. Nomoto, and their wonderful head of the Emoto Peace Project, Michiko Hayashi. They'll be giving a special seminar presentation on Saturday, March 7th. This is a world-class event, something you just don't want to miss.
Be looking forward to that too, Ted.
Yeah, it'll be just amazing. But they're doing such beneficial things for humanity. I just can't say enough good things about them. But and so are our friends. And Ambassador Terwilliger's here now, and he's I'm so glad that he's here, and I'm so grateful for his help and your help too, Scott, in raising the consciousness of this planet.
Well, it's my pleasure. I wanted to give a little background on Ambassador Terwilliger.
Yes, please.
It was quite shocking for me at first to have a communication from this being, because he's human, 18 to 24 feet tall. It's hard to judge, because they immortalized their physical bodies over a billion years ago. This race, the Say race, are responsible for seeding, developing human, humanoid, mammalian, plant life in much of the Milky Way and Andromeda galaxies and several others, and a number of worlds in parallel dimensions, and brought these cultures up to a certain space-frame race and then vanished.
Wow.
They were in other words, our DNA really has the same structure or the same pattern. They were our mentors, you might say, as human beings.
Sure.
And they have recently showed up or returned because they went through their own consciousness change, dealing with taking back on the responsibility to help the younger races. And so the first place they showed up was at a meeting of over 5,000 of the Galactic Alliance representatives of these benevolent world systems that you talked about earlier, Ted.
Right.
Which changed them, and because, you know, there hasn't really been a thrust moving forward for this planet to really neutralize in a benevolent way the misdirection that the hidden and elected leaders are taking this world.
Right.
Here's the thing. I never send out negativity towards them because I know for a fact that they are no longer in control of what they're doing.
Sure. Sure.
If you make an alliance with a totalitarian race from another world to get technology, or you're hoodwinked into it, they carry a device that can implant terrorizing images in the electromagnetic field around the body, which means you're suddenly you're thinking one way, and the next minute you're thinking your own, you're making up your own mind,
wow.
but you're being influenced by this artificially created implanted program,
wow.
which convinces you against your better judgment to go in certain directions. And it's illegal for them to have done this, but they did it.
Yeah.
And the benevolent forces monitored this, and it's all coming to a head.
Sure.
I think everybody knows it's coming to some kind of a climax point.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Where it's got to go in a new direction.
Sure.
And to do that, well, I started writing this book. I had no idea where it was going or why I was even doing it. And then it became clear that I was being shared a great deal of wisdom and love from this being. And I had to go deeper into having communications with him and experiences with him and others in order to get this work out. And it's a work in progress. I plan on having a fourth edition out with a special section in the back in May. And I'm going to have an editor proofreader go over it with me outside the publishing company and just really do this the finest way I can.
Mm-hmm.
And that section will contain special techniques for each of the chapters in the book that people can use to explore the hidden truth that's revealed in those chapters and have experiences for themselves.
Now, you'll be giving a seminar and a workshop, won't you, on the Hue at the conference?
I sure will be, yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so grateful that that you'll be here for the conference. We have... We have several minutes left on the program, and I just wanted to say that next week I'll be inviting Lois Berman from Boston, a famous and well-known TV and radio psychic from the Boston area. She's one of on the show for an hour. She'll be one of my presenters at the Galactic Wisdom Conference next month, as well as Susan Shumsky. She's the world's authority on chakras and auras, and especially for Valentine's Day, if your chakra's been hurt by a relationship, she can provide you with some wonderful, wonderful advice on how to heal your chakra and aura. But anyway, Scott, I want you to continue. We've got about 2 minutes left or so.
Well, let me just say this. I wanted to say people can go to my website at paralleltime.com,
mm-hmm.
P-A-R-A-L-L-E-L-T-I-M-E, two words put together, and click here to buy, and it just goes to the publishing company in New York, and then it links to Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and I recommend people go to Barnes & Noble because I know they stock the book in a central warehouse and it comes out right away. But they can go whatever retail outlet they're comfortable with and get this book. It's not expensive. And they can get it that way and explore a lot of other very interesting and wonderful information and at the website.
Okay.
That's one way, or they can just order online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble and find this. Just the Say Raise Agenda, mm-hmm. S-E-R-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
So that's out of the way. I wanted to get that off on the air for your listeners today. And
wonderful.
And if
wonderful.
They want to have experience with all that's been purposefully deprived them, and I mean intentionally, and they want to begin to remember who they really are and where they're really going and where they really came from, doing it through the Hue will begin that process in a protected manner. The best thing I can share with people.
Wonderful, wonderful, Scott. And also, too, if people have any spiritual questions, I have a new column called Ask Ted as part of my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And, Scott, you've rendered such a valuable service to humanity, and I just want to thank you on behalf of all my listeners around the world for your wonderful work.
Well, I tell you, I want to thank you, Ted, for having the courage and the presence to put this show on and be the radio show host that you are.
Oh, well, thank you,
Scott.
Because
without you and people like you, none of this would get out to people, would it?
No, that's true. It wouldn't. And my purpose in life is to raise consciousness to make this planet a much better and happier place. And I know we're headed there.
We certainly are. And it's going to be some really unexpected things coming down the pike here. It's going to be pretty amazing.
Can you, at the conference, could you help people get in touch with the Galactic Alliance as well through the
Yes.
Hue? Okay.
Yes. That's
okay.
One of the things that I do as
Wonderful.
A co-creator with these beings
mm-hmm.
on this planet. It's kind of like what my mission is to give people the tool and get them started and the protection so that they can begin to have the experiences and maybe more than I've had. I mean, you know, that's the whole point of why
okay.
I do it.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Scott, thank you so much. And friends, stay tuned. Next Friday, we'll be having Lois Berman on. I'll be asking Lois Berman, a famous psychic and Dr. Susan Sumsky. I'd like to finish this program now with John Lennon's Imagine.